And welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Coming up later on the program, violinist and conductor Joshua Bell speaks to Charles Greenfield about his career and his upcoming concert at the Arscht with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. Our film critic Dan Hudak previews the 9th Women's International Film and Art Festival with founder Yvonne McCormick-Lyons. Chef Norman Van Aken renders A Word on Food, and our Florida Keys calendar features Andy Newman. Established in 1981 by Lynn and Ted Arison, the National Young Arts Foundation continues its mission to identify and support the next generation of artists and to contribute to the cultural vitality of our nation by investing in the artistic development of talented young artists in the visual, literary, and performing arts. Now located on their new campus, the former Bacardi property at 2100 Biscayne Boulevard, South Florida awaits the exciting transformation of young arts with the help of the renowned architect Frank Geary into a year-round presenter of the arts. This Tuesday, March 11th at 8 p.m., the National Young Arts Foundation presents a one-night-only world premiere of The Way of the Rain, Miami, a performance art piece by Sybil Sagers-Redford, also known as Billy, in collaboration with a superstar creative team with a special guest appearance by Robert Redford. Coinciding with the premiere, there will also be a free premiere exhibition of Ms. Redford's paintings and video works at the Young Arts Gallery. With us today to discuss these exciting presentations is Mr. Paul Lear, Executive Director of Young Arts, and Ms. Sybil Sagers-Redford. And welcome back to you, Paul, and Ms. Redford. It's quite an honor to have you join us today, Billy.
Likewise, it's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Paul, we want to start out with you. How are you and your students settling in on your beautiful new campus?
Oh, thanks so much for having me back, Ed. It's a dream come true for me, for the students, and hopefully ultimately for the community, where we'll now be able to have these year-round programs where we've been in South Florida for 30 years, but always nomadic. So now we're starting to build up the steam where there are always things going on the campus, and this is just the beginning.
You must be so excited. I'm surprised I don't see you jumping out of your skin.
Quite frankly, it's really hard not to. I wake up every day and I'm excited about what's going on and the next projects that we're doing. And this is one of the most exciting projects we've ever done.
And what you're bringing South Florida is immeasurable. You're bringing such excitement and fantastic talent. It's incredible. Give us a brief rundown of your to-do list for this year. What might be accomplished?
Well, so Young Arts is now going to become a year-round program in Miami, where before it used to be just a week here and a week there. So we're going to have different spaces at the campus, starting with in the blue and white tower that everybody knows on Biscayne Boulevard, with the 28,000 hand-painted blue and white tiles, is going to have a seventh floor, the top floor, restaurant, bar, and lounge type of space where we're going to partner with a fantastic restaurateur so you can always go and get something great to eat or drink. But then on the other side, there's going to be a stage with different kinds of art throughout the year. So some nights it might be spoken words, some nights it might be jazz or classical or pop or Latin or video. So it's going to be a place where people who love and appreciate the arts can come and experience all new great art forms. Then moving down in the building, there's going to be on the first and second floor the gallery and exhibition space, also designed by Frank Geary, that's going to have exhibitions from all different partners, both local and national. So we started off with Marina Abramovich, with another show that we did then with MoMA in New York for Olafur Eliasson. And then we've now got Billy's show going on there, and we've got other things planned. So that's going to be, again, a year-round gallery and exhibition space that will be guest curated by partners like MoMA in New York, LACMA in L.A., and PAM right down the street. And then we move on further down the campus. We've got the Jewel Box, which will be all different kinds of spaces for all the different disciplines that we work with in visual, literary, and performing arts. And, of course, there is going to be the new Frank Geary Performing Arts Center and large park with video capabilities. So it's all incredibly exciting.
It's incredibly exciting, I got to tell you. Billy, tell us about your production, The Way of the Rain, Miami, and how did you come to present this at Young Arts?
First of all, let me explain. I have been an environmental artist for the last 25 years who's continuously concerned about what's going on with our Earth. And as we all know, It is out of balance. The performance art piece, I started doing in Albuquerque, New Mexico last year in conjunction with the film and media festival. And I worked with my collaborator, a composer from Iceland, David Thor Johnson. And we created this piece, The Way of the Rain, to create a voice to focus on what's going on, you know, with the imbalance in our world. How it came to Miami, I met with Paul. We met at the Sundance Americans for the Arts board meeting. And he had heard about this performance piece in Albuquerque, and I told him a little bit about it. I sent him some information about it, and he invited me to come here to Miami to present it. And I told him, I don't have a collaborator. My musician is very busy in Europe, and I would need to have new music rewritten to this piece. And he said, well, I think I can help.
So I expect that of you, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, one of the great things about Young Arts, you know, when you look and see who the alums are, it's, we've been saying 17,000 alums for so many years. It's really about 20,000 plus alums in every different field. So you're looking for klezmer music, you're looking for violin, you're looking for whatever it is. You know, we've got dancers and singers and videographers and filmmakers and whatever you're looking for. So it's a great resource to have, and it's a great partnership with Billy.
Much more information online at youngarts.org. Once again, the location of Tuesday's premiere, The Way of the Rain, Miami, is at 2100 Biscayne Boulevard. And you can also call 1-800-970-ARTS. That translates to 2787. And Billy, tell us about your great creative team. You've got some heavy names here.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I'm the luckiest person on this planet right now, because it was totally unexpected. But when Paul and I talked, and he mentioned, you know, we can find some really great musicians or great composer for you, I realized, yes, that is a great possibility. And I also felt that with a new composer, I wanted to expand the message. And so Paul and I decided, after Paul recommended Dave Egger, Desmond Richardson, and after I learned more about them, I thought, this is probably a dream, but I know Paul can make dreams come true. So then I met Will Calhoun through the Sundance Film Composers Lab, and he had performed 2 years ago, not as a drummer particularly, but he is a collector of indigenous music instruments from all over the world. And he performed on a variety of these instruments, and it was so powerful and so touching. And I felt he has to be part of this performance art piece. So I saw him again last Christmas, and I just basically attacked him and said, "Well, you don't know anything about me. You don't know what I'm doing, but you have to be part of this." And he said, "Well, what is it all about?" I said, "It's an art performance piece." And he said, "If it's about art, I'm in." So we all then met the musicians, Dave Egger, Will Calhoun, Dave's associate, Chuck Palmer, and Desmond Richardson. We all met in New York just a couple months ago, and none of us really knew each other very well. The musicians never had met. They met briefly just for a couple of hours to jam together to see if there is a connection. And the connection was remarkable, because the recordings they presented to me was just so amazing. So the music was based basically upon my concept, which The Way of the Rain is an homage to the planet Earth and its four universal elements. So in detail, I explained to them the concept and what my idea of the music would be, and they really absorbed it in such a way that I was totally surprised when I heard the first tunes, how amazing it would be. So then we all met in a recording studio, because we realized we need some music for Desmond once he found his dancers to rehearse. That went extremely well, so we all bonded in that studio. We didn't want to leave that night. It was just so fantastic. And so here we are. And so I was very lucky and honored just to be part of the rehearsals for our production the last two evenings with Desmond and his dancers. So I can promise you it's going to be an amazing experience.
And if I may add, visually, your beautiful silks, painted silks, are striking. And they're kind of kinetic. They'll be moving as well as the dancers and the music, and it sounds just magnificent.
So the silks came about. You know, I had been working with watercolor for many years, and since part time I live in New Mexico in the high desert, we have the same monsoon rains as strong as we had here yesterday. So they're pretty powerful, and I decided I wanted to make the rain my collaborator within my watercolors. And that turned out to be quite exciting. So basically, I create, these pieces of art with the rain. Mm-hmm. So I go out there in the rain, and I put my pieces of paper outside, and the rain creates the abstract watercolors. So I had those printed on Japanese silk. And that's a symbol for rain, falling water, you know. And so you see about 14... of these tremendously large silks as the stage design. And so they will be specially lit in all kinds of different ways by Steve Cohen, who is an amazing artist in itself. He's a lighting designer who works a lot for Billy Joel, Lenny Kravitz. He has done a lot of work for many
great credits among your crew. Great credits.
Really.
I wonder whether Georgia O'Keeffe was watching over you out there in the Southwest. Let me also mention there will also be a short film presentation by F. Thomas McBee III, an acclaimed video artist. And just by chance, there'll be a special performance reading by your wonderful husband, Academy Award winner and young arts master teacher, Mr. Robert Redford.
Well, the film is actually my film. It's not Thomas's film, but it's the film I created.
Very good.
So Thomas is my collaborator in this. Just to set this clear, it's my piece of art,
the
video film. What was the next question?
Well, we've unfortunately run out of time. I hope you all have had a little bit of fun. I certainly know I have, and I'm amazed at this marvelous presentation taking place once again Tuesday at 8 p.m. at Young Arts, 2100 Biscayne Boulevard. Once again, for more info, go to youngarts.org or call 1-800-970-2787. As well, Robert and Billy Redford will be in conversation as part of Young Arts Salon Series. That's Wednesday, March 12th at 6 p.m. in the Tower Building on the 7th floor. A beautiful room you have to see, designed in part by Frank Geary. So once again, for more information, call 1-800-970-ARTS-2787 or 305-377-1140. And Billy and Paul, thank you so much for joining us here on South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Yes, thank you.
Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, film critic Dan Hudak speaks with founder and director Yvonne McCormick-Lyons about the 9th Women's International Film and Art Festival. Chef Norman Van Aken offers a word on food, and our Florida Keys calendar features Andy Newman. Now, our classical arts contributor, Charles Greenfield, welcomes his esteemed guest, who will soon be playing the Arsht with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields.
If you had to pick the most popular American violinist on tour, it would not be difficult to come up with the name of Joshua Bell. He's been called the greatest American violinist active today by the Boston Herald. Heading to South Florida's Arsht Center March 15th, as music director and soloist of the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, Joshua Bell and orchestra will perform Bach, Beethoven, Saint-Saëns, and Schubert. To use a sports simile, Bell is to the classical music circuit what LeBron James means to the Miami Heat. A determined, intelligent, super skillful performer who clears the musical hoops with seamless grace and dramatic passion. His bio seems picture perfect. Born in Bloomington, Indiana in 1967 to academic parents, his father was professor of psychology, Bell at age 4 stretched rubber bands on furniture to approximate the sounds his mother made on the piano. Starting with lessons the next year, he later became a student of Joseph Gingold, who was concertmaster for the Cleveland Orchestra under George Sell. By 14, Bell had soloed with the Philadelphia Orchestra under Riccardo Muti, and at 18, he debuted at Carnegie Hall with the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra. In 2004, he was named 2004 Billboard Classical Artist of the Year. In 2007, Joshua Bell cooperated with the Washington Post writer Gene Weingarten and played for 45 minutes in the Washington, D.C. Metro subway disguised as a busker with a baseball cap. Bell collected a measly $32, but Weingarten won a Pulitzer for the story. In April, Bell received the acclaimed Avery Fisher Prize at Lincoln Center, and in September 2008 joined the faculty at the Indiana University Jacobs School of Music as a senior lecturer. The same month in 2008, as a Sony Classical artist, he made his first recording of the Vivaldi classic, The Four Seasons, with musicians from the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, founded in 1958 by Sir Neville Mariner, and with over 500 recordings. Bell is not only the first American, but also the first person to hold the post of music director since its creation. Gramophone reported that, quote, "the audience reaction has been nothing short of rock concert enthusiasm," close quote. Recently, I spoke to Joshua Bell about the violin and his recent shift to conductor soloist, an upcoming concert at the Arts Center March 15th with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. Joshua Bell, welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you.
What kind of realization did you make in your late teens that music was not just a possible profession, but the force that would sort of dictate your life to come?
Well, let's see. Well, music has been a part of my life since I was about 4, as far as playing the violin, although I guess I grew up with it around me. My parents always playing NPR on the radio, and also playing. My mother played the piano. I would say it was around the age of 12 that I sort of made a turn. Started thinking of music in a much, I think, deeper way as far as its significance in my life. And a lot of that had to do with my teacher, Joseph Gingold, whom I went to when I was 12, and he really inspired me. And I saw he was just a great example of someone that just was completely consumed with music, and he was a very happy and joyous sort of soul. And so I think he was just a great example. And that's around the time, around the age of 12 or 13, I thought, you know, I could really do this as a way of life.
Now, with that, with the technical prowess, comes musical responsibility. And what are key elements you use to chart that sensibility of a great piece of music? Are there signposts that sort of stand out when you're thinking about the emotional content?
Oh, well, that's a difficult question. I mean, it's first of all, it's, as far as the technical versus musical and or artistic, I mean, those things are very intertwined. And I don't really like to separate them because, you know, your technique, you're developing constantly with based on what the music and the artistry demands. So they're very much intertwined. You can't have musicality, so to speak, without technique and really vice versa. And that's something that grows. You're constantly changing and learning throughout your life and refining your technique. And but the music... where to begin? I mean, as far as it's you know, music is about telling a story and bringing to life, in the case of classical music, you know, this incredible sort of worlds that are created by the greatest minds, I think, that have walked the planet. And that's, you know, I don't mean that literally. I guess that sounds funny, the metaphor, minds walking the planet. But you know what I mean? Yeah. You know, Beethoven and Mozart and Bach, I mean, they've created these incredible things, and we just have to find the story they're trying to tell and hit the right emotional notes, and that's something that's a great challenge, and it is a responsibility, you might say.
Now, you've played solo with orchestras for over 2 decades, I believe, and what signs or indications do you seek in a conductor? And we'll talk about the fact that you are now becoming a conductor. Or likewise, how do you interact with the orchestra being a sort of an uber string instrument, the violin itself?
Well, I have worked with certainly maybe thousands of conductors probably at this point. So I've been around a lot of them, and you know, working the rapport with the conductors, a lot like chamber music, you know, a good conductor is someone that you're really playing off of each other and feeling the music and breathing together. And I've learned a lot watching, you know, conductors, learned what to do and, of course, learned what not to do, what doesn't work. And a great conductor knows how to balance many, many things. I mean, he knows when to give a gesture, knows what the orchestra needs from him or her. And that sometimes means letting them just play, you know, and then inserting oneself just at the right time. And then there's the whole diplomatic element, how to deal with the orchestra personally, which some conductors, great musicians, they can fail to do properly, and it can result in, you know, alienation. And so there's a lot of things. Being a conductor is a very tough job, but it's one that I'm really enjoying, sort of stepping into that role with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. I'm having an absolute blast, and getting to explore the great repertoire like Beethoven's symphonies has just been a dream.
Well, let's talk a little more specifically about the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. Now, you did a classical recording of Vivaldi's The Four Seasons in 2008, and there must have been some sort of love at first sight, because here you are in front of them as a soloist and the conductor. What happened? Was there a click?
Well, my first experience with this Academy of St. Martin's was back in 1986, or so, I think it was 86, I made my first recording when I was 18 years old with Sir Neville Mariner, and there's few of the members still left in the orchestra from back then. And then really it was about a decade ago that I started coming as a guest director, doing mostly string things, and then it started to grow into more symphonic, larger things. And they just asked me several years, you know, 3 or 4 years ago to be their music director, because I guess I think we really get on well, and there's been a good chemistry, and so it's all been quite sort of organic. But I think it's still going really well. I mean, I'm just loving it, and they're an incredible orchestra. They're really a bunch of chamber musicians. Again, I use the term chamber music. They just sit on the edge of their seats and they play together, unlike most orchestras, unlike any orchestra really I've played with before. They really their level of attention and energy is really something special.
Well, let's very briefly, because we have very little time now, March 15th at the Arts Center, you will be conducting and soloing. The program is Bach's Violin Concerto No. 2 in E Major, Beethoven's first, Saint-Saëns, the Rondo Capriccio, and Schubert's String Quartet, Death and the Maiden, arranged for string orchestra. Do you want to briefly comment about that?
Well, it's sort of an eclectic program in a way. It's got a little bit of everything. You have your violin concerto, you know, your classical Bach. You have your violin showpiece, which is one of the great showpieces for violin orchestra, the Saint-Saëns. You have the First Symphony of Beethoven, which is such an amazing, amazing work, and so bright and bubbly and wonderful to end the first half. Ending then with something quite different, because it's just strings playing really one of Schubert's greatest works, his string quartet, The Death of the Maiden, arranged for orchestra. It's quite in a quite powerful way, and that's quite a much more of a darker piece, but really one of the most profound pieces of music I think ever written. So the program spans a whole lot of things, and I think everything is quite appealing for the audiences. The music is really just great music.
Well, Joshua Bell, I want to thank you for talking to us today on South Florida Arts Beat, and I'm sure the concert coming up on March 15th will be extraordinarily fun and exciting.
Well, thank you. Nice talking with you.
Joshua Bell and the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields will perform at the Arts Center March 15th at 8 p.m. Considering his worldwide reputation and passionate stage presence, the concert will definitely draw a large audience. It's another indication that South Florida is beginning to make its mark as a target for outstanding touring artists and orchestras. For more information, call the box office at 305-949-6722 or 1-877-949-6722. The Arts Center's website is artscenter.org. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Charles Greenfield.
Charles Greenfield is a classical music contributor for the Sun Sentinel and has written for the Miami Herald. You can email him at cdgpm@bellsouth.net. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat continues in just a moment. It's South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Coming up on the program, Chef Norman Van Aken serves up a word on food, and our Florida Keys calendar features Andy Newman. Right now, film critic Dan Hudak previews the 9th Women's International Film and Arts Festival, scheduled for March 26th through the 30th.
The old adage says, women can't live with them, can't live without them. Or as Norm from Cheers once opined,
women, you can't live with them, pass the beer nuts.
Discouragingly, the film industry has lived without women behind the camera for a shockingly long time, with only 8% of the Directors Guild of America currently comprised of the world's better gender. Local film festivals often showcase a program on notable women's issues and filmmakers, but none do so with more regularity and fervor than the Women's International Film and Arts Festival, which is now in its 9th year and is once again headed by the seemingly tireless Yvonne McCormick Lyons. The festival opens with Green Card Warriors, about an undocumented Latino family in Los Angeles that sends its oldest son off to war, only to see him not return. Here's the film's trailer.
You don't remember me, do you?
No, sir, I don't.
You were at my house. You sat at my kitchen table. You remember my son, don't you? We buried him in his army uniform not too long ago.
I'm sorry to hear that, Mr.
Garza. Humberto Rafael Garza was the name of my son.
Sorry, Mr. Garza.
I convinced my family that it was the right thing to do. What am I supposed to do now, huh? Tell them you're a bunch of liars? I live here. My son is here. He went to school here!
In total, more than 50 films made either by women, for women, or about women will screen at the festival, encompassing a variety of genres and approaches that truly offer something for everyone. We recently sat down with the president and founder of the festival, Yvonne McCormick Lyons, to learn more. Yvonne, welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you. I always love being here.
Thank you. I saw a study from the Women's Media Center recently about the shockingly low numbers of women working in the film industry, which to me just puts all the more importance of the existence of a festival like yours.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's funny because, you know, the years go by and I've been mentioning for the past, you know, we're actually moving into our 9th annual festival and I've been telling everybody that I could possibly reach that, you know, women are still, our numbers are so low that as filmmakers, we're still only 9%, 8%, 9% as far as directors are concerned in the industry. And, you know, which is why the Women's International Film Festival is so important. I mean, and it, not only in the film industry, but in terms of how women are portrayed in the media. You know, the numbers are saying that only 32% of the speaking characters are women. That when women and girls and boys are shown in movies and in other areas of media, almost 40% of the girls are wearing sexually revealing clothing, while only boys are only shown 6.7% of the time wearing sexually or revealing clothing. So it's not just, you know, who's behind the camera, but it's actually what's being shown on the camera that really is alarming. Women in the film industry are making on average $40,000 less than men are. And so these numbers continue to, you know, exist. And as a women's film festival, we're really about, you know, showing films made by women, providing a venue where we can talk about these issues. I mean, at the same time, we have fantastic films. I just love the festival. Every year we receive more than 400 films from around the world. You know, this year we have a good number of features, 16 features. We have 22 shorts. We have more than 15, almost 20 countries represented with the films. And so I think no matter what you're looking for, and this is one of the things I think, too, in terms of when we talk about the women and the numbers, I mean, they range from everything from what we would think of as chick flicks to horror films. We have a lot of comedies. And even in our opening night film, for example, Green Card Warriors, that I know you guys did the trailer from, it's not what you would think of in terms of a woman's made film. It's dealing with gang activity. It's dealing with very topical issues right now, which are immigration in the United States and, you know, the American underclass and what we do and how the people who are immigrants to our country, how they're dealing with that. It's such a topical issue, but it's not what you would think in terms of being a quote-unquote chick flick, which really just shows that women can make all kinds of movies.
What is it that has to happen to change the role of women in the film industry? What do we need to do to get there?
I think there has to be increasing awareness. I think when there is any group that is left out of a majority, it really takes a dedicated effort to make change. And I don't think that men are by nature trying to not, you know, include women. I think that they're just used to having, you know, their buddy. This is the guy they worked with on the past three films. They're familiar with their crew. They're familiar with their people. And so the thought of somebody else, whether woman or man, is not really something that's really taken into consideration. I think there it has to be a concerted effort, you know, to make change.
And with that being said, we always touch on this fact, and it's true, Yvonne, even though the focus is on women and their role in the industry and that these are films made by women and for women, the reality is that men, children, everyone is invited to these screenings because they truly do have an audience for everyone at the festival.
Absolutely, absolutely. One of the things that we always say, the film festival is by women, about women, and for all who love women. And we say that because the films are not just made for women, but we also want the men in our lives, the boys in our lives, the children in our lives to be part of the festival as well. As I said, the films come in all genres, and as such, we really, really need the support of the men in our lives and definitely invite them to be part of the festival in any way, shape, or form that they can come out. And men are part of the selection committee as well, so. So, yes, we definitely have it as an inclusive event.
And this isn't exactly one chick flick after another. We have comedies, we have dramas, we have all sorts of types of movies from all over the world playing at this festival. So you can look at it as you would any festival program and say, hey, that looks cool, that looks funny, that looks interesting, let's check this out. And in doing so, you're supporting the female in your life and the festival at the same time.
Correct, correct. The films are, you know, Venezuela, Mexico, you name it, we have it from Asia, from pretty well all of the continents, from Israel. We have a wonderful film called Brave Miss World by Cecilia Peck, who's the daughter of Gregory Peck, who will be here for the festival. And she'll be here to talk about her as a director. She's also a Golden Globe-nominated actress, and of course, her life being the daughter of the great, legendary Gregory Peck. But she did a wonderful film about rape. It's a documentary. And it's really, you know, as I said, something for everyone. There are shorts, there are horror flicks.
One thing that surprised me to learn was how much women love horror movies. Because you read these columns and it's like, wow, the female audience for horror movies on opening weekend is just as, if not surpassing, the male audience. And it's just, it's kind of a surprise because one would expect your teenage boys there and that's about it.
Yeah, and I think what it is, and I don't know if I have the exact answer, but definitely I think that we like being scared, but we definitely enjoy all kinds of movies. And I think what tends to happen is women disproportionately go to movies than men do, than our male counterparts do as well. So I think movies are something that we enjoy, you know, all around.
It's the old trick on a date. You take the girl to a horror movie, or at least so I've been told. Yvonne, it was a pleasure catching up with you.
Thank you, Dan. It's always a pleasure to spend time with you. Take care of your voice. And we look forward to everybody coming up to the festival.
Likewise.
As I said, it's something for everyone.
I'll see you soon. Thanks.
Thanks. Bye.
The 9th Annual Women's International Film and Arts Festival screenings and events will be held at the James L. Knight Center in downtown Miami and the Mayfair Hotel in Coconut Grove. For more information, visit womensfilmfest.com. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Dan Hudak.
Once again, the dates for the 9th Women's International Film Festival are March 26th through the 30th. Chairman Emeritus of the Florida Film Critics Circle, Dan Hudak, is a nationally syndicated film critic. You can visit him online at hudakonhollywood.com. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue right after these messages. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Ed Bell with you. And now, Chef Norman Van Aken gives us a word on food.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the frim-fram sauce with the offs and fade, with shafafa on the side. Shoot-doo-dee-doo-ya-doo-doo.
Hi, I'm Norman Van Aken, and welcome to A Word on Food. Today's word on food is steakhouse. Our father, Harold Van Aken, was a fan of professional boxing and so-called professional wrestling. He laughed out loud when he watched the wrestlers like Gorgeous George or Haystacks Calhoun hamming it up and throwing themselves at each other on the screen of our Philco TV. He watched boxers like Ray Robinson, Carmine Basilio, and Rocky Marciano solemnly, like he was studying. I was only able to live with him until I was 9, but his presence is etched in my mind. The night he took me and my little sister Bette to what he called a wrestling match remains as clear as the week before this, except the one with him remains in black and white, like the old boxing films he cranked up now and then. My dad did not cook. He liked steak and would have gladly eaten it 5 nights a week. When one of the boxers got a black eye, he would shout that the bruised fighter's cornermen should dress his face with a beefsteak. When my father and mother were married, he'd fly her to Miami Beach in the winter, and they'd go to the fights. If he had a religion, the scriptures and the liturgy might have been boxing and steak. I don't think he ever got to the famed Burns Steakhouse in Tampa. Tampa was not on his route. But if he had, I know he would have been in his kind of wonderland. I was recently across the street from the legendary steakhouse at the new Epicurean Hotel the family descendants of Mr. Bernlaxer have built. I have also been to Burns. To step into the world of Burns has, it has often been noted, always been a time travel backwards. But to step into the Epicurean Hotel and spend a weekend is to experience the world of food and wine in a contemporary and exalted state. Yet it is homey too, like a place in Napa Valley can be. It is epigrammatic of the world of steakhouses now. There is a new wave of meaning in what defines a steakhouse today. It has to be careful, or the would-be successful venture will be too far ahead of the crowd that would consider steak first when it comes to dinner, like Dad would. The modern steakhouse operators believed that the old branding was not working on attracting as many women as possible. Maybe that's true. Animal trophies hung from zebra-skinned walls was not cutting it, so to speak. The steakhouse circa 2000-something doesn't shout so much as seduce. And hasn't that been more effective in most ways with the fairer sex? I think I will leave these intellectual realms and get back to carnal ones, at least of the world of kitchens and dining rooms. In the Queens area of New York, there is a steakhouse named M. Wells. To catch the trendistas, M. Wells mixes it up all right. They feature trout killed from tanks to order and barbecued mussels on a stick, along with, at $100 a person, porterhouse steak, so they walk in both worlds. I heard on the news that chicken has just surpassed beef in what Americans now eat. I'm sure Daddy would have counterpunched. I'm Norman Van Aken, and that's my word on food.
Norman Van Aken is the author of My Key West, and is also the director of restaurants for the Miami Culinary Institute and Tuyo in downtown Miami. Please tune in tomorrow morning at 8:34 on Weekend Edition to hear Fried Chicken. And here's our South Florida Arts Beat entertainment calendar. And today we welcome back Andy Newman of the Florida Keys and Key West Tourism Council. Great to have you back with us, Andy.
And it's great to be with you.
Tell me what's going on in the fabulous Florida Keys.
Well, first of all, Ed, the Florida Keys Eco-Discovery Center continues its Tropical Botanic Artists. That's through March 26th, and of course, that's in Key West. Meanwhile, still in Key West, the Waterfront Playhouse is presenting Xanadu. That's through March 29th. Ed and down in Key West. Through March 15th, the Red Barn Theater is presenting I Am My Own Wife. It's a fascinating tale of Charlotte von Malsdorf, a German transvestite who is a collector of culture and, above all, a survivor. And also, Ed, in Key West, throughout the entire month of March, it's a celebration of Tennessee Williams' 103rd birthday. A number of different venues throughout the Key West area will be paying homage to Tennessee Williams. Of course, he lived in Key West, he wrote in Key West, and he also painted in Key West. And that's something that most folks do not know. And so there is an exhibition of original paintings by Tennessee Williams at the Custom House Museum on Front Street. And at one other event in Key West, and it's something that happens every second and fourth Sundays of the month, and sometimes we don't really talk about it, and it is the Sheriff's Animal Farm. It'll be open this Sunday, and it's open each second and fourth Sunday between 1 and 3 p.m. It's an opportunity to go to the Sheriff's Animal Farm, visit the animals there. They have horses, they have cows, pigs, goats, bunnies, alligators, tropical birds, even Kramer the emu, and the microphone cable-eating goat. It's a free opportunity to visit the animals, and the animal farm is really a fabulous opportunity for folks that visit the Key West area. Moving up the Keys, this weekend, tomorrow and Sunday, it is the original Marathon Seafood Festival. It'll be staged at the Marathon Community Park, mile marker 49 Oceanside. It's sponsored by the Organized Fishermen of Florida and Marathon Chamber of Commerce. There will be live music, vendor booths, sweets, treats, beverages, and, of course, that fabulous Florida Keys Seafood Festival. I mean, what other excuse do you need to go down to the Florida Keys this weekend than visiting and eating at the original Marathon Seafood Festival? Also in Marathon, Ed, in conjunction with the Seafood Festival, the Florida Keys Art Guild will be featuring their weekend art show. They've been doing this for more than 15 years, and it will be located at the entrance of Marathon Community Park. And a little more music, moving up to Alamorada on Sunday. It is the second Sunday picking in the park. This will be at the Southwinds Park at mile marker 82.1 Oceanside. It's an open bluegrass jam for all ages and skill levels. Some other events coming up here in the Middle Florida Keys. Still in Marathon, March 13th through April 12th, the 32nd annual Judge Florida Keys Watercolor Society's art show. That will be at the Marathon Community Theater, mile marker 49.5. And the same dates, March 13th through April 12th, the Marathon Community Theater will be presenting 9 to 5, the musical. Back to Key West we go, March 14th to the 15th, the 54th annual Key West House and Garden Tours. That'll be 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. each day. It's organized by the Old Island Restoration Foundation. Up the Overseas Highway we go to Alamorada, March 15th, the Outdoor Pops in the Park Viva Florida Concert. That starts at 4 o'clock at Founders Park Bayside, mile marker 87, on Plantation Key. Also that weekend in Key Largo, the 15th through the 16th, the Florida Keys Art Guild's Weekend Art Show. That'll be at the Waldorf Shopping Plaza. Back down there in Key West, the Impromptu Classical Concerts of Key West presents Gabriel Cabezas. That's on March 16th. And on Thursday, March 20th, in Alamorada, of course, it is the third Thursday Art Walk. It's presented by the Marotta Way Arts and Cultural District. That's that area at between mile marker 81 and 82. There will be culinary art, live music, some wonderful galleries that participate every single month, and it is a free admission event. Down in Key West at March 20th, the Mel Fisher Maritime Museum will be presenting Key West African and South Beach Cemeteries. You know, the Maritime Museum has been very active, Ed, in revealing the story of the Key West African Cemetery at Higgs Beach. They've been doing it since 2002. The museum archaeologist Corey Malcolm will be talking about the history with a multimedia story of the African Cemetery. It'll start at 6:30 p.m. at the Mel Fisher Maritime Museum courtyard, and it is free as well. And up in Key Largo, Ed, on March 21st, the Ocean Life Lecture Series continues with Last Train to Paradise. It is presented by the Friends of the Key Largo Cultural Center, and it will be at the Murray Nelson Government and Cultural Center, mile marker 102 in Key Largo. And Ed, Cabaret is coming to Key Largo March 29th to the 30th at that Murray Nelson Government and Cultural Center. Showtimes are Saturday at 8 p.m., Sunday matinee at 2 p.m., and then back into Marathon for March 30th, the 17th annual Taste of the Islands. And as we really wrap it up here, the 33rd annual 7-mile bridge run on Saturday, April 5th. We're letting people know that not because they can enter, because the race is indeed sold out, but very important for folks traveling to the Keys on that Saturday morning to understand that that 7-mile bridge will be closed between 6:45 in the morning and 9 a.m. Of course, much more information on these and so many other events on the Florida Keys website at it's flakeys.com.
And a big thanks to Andy Newman of the Florida Keys and Key West Tourism Council for all of those great, exciting events. Andy, great weekend to you, sir.
And a wonderful weekend to you.
And the South Florida Jazz Concert of the Year takes place tonight at 8 o'clock at Gusman Concert Hall on the University of Miami campus. It's the Whit Seidner Tribute, featuring jazz saxophonist Dave Liebman, the Frost School of Music Concert Jazz Band, Mark Egan, Danny Gottlieb, Mark Colby, the Miami Saxophone Quartet, Dean Shelleyberg, and the entire jazz faculty of the University of Miami. They're expressing their honor and their appreciation to Professor Emeritus Whit Seidner for his 40 years as an educator and chair of the Department of Studio Music Jazz at the University of Miami. For info and tickets, call 305-284-2400, or go to music.miami.edu. The Adrian Arsht Center presents their 6th annual Miami Made Festival, a weekend-long showcase of new works in progress created and performed by a roster of Miami-based artists across multiple disciplines. That's through this Sunday, the 9th, and it will include staged play readings, a multimedia performance in the center's intimate Carnival Studio Theater, and much, much more. And it's all free. For more info, go to arshtcenter.org or call 305-949-6722. We'll rebroadcast South Florida Arts Beat tonight and every Friday night at 7 o'clock on our WLRN Extra HD channel. You can tune in on your HD radio or go to our website at WLRN.org for more info. That's today's edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We hope you enjoyed the show. I'm Ed Bell, producer and host. Our theme was composed by Mike Levine and performed by Mike and Sam Levine. Paul Leary is our online producer. Thanks to our technical director, Andy Wagner, and our contributors, Charles Greenfield, Dan Hudak, Norman Van Aken, and Andy Newman. Please keep your dial set right here to 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Until next time, this is Ed Bell saying bye-bye. Enjoy.